Can you please read items 113 and 114 together, Carla?
Item 113, refer a measure to city voters for the May 19, 2020 election, authorizing the extension of a program dedicated to street repair and traffic safety through a temporary 10 cents per gallon tax on motor vehicle fuels in Portland for vehicles not subject to weight mile tax, and amend City Code 17.105. And item 114, establish a heavy vehicle use tax to fund Portland street repair and traffic safety program.
Commissioner Daley.
Thank you, Mayor. Now we will move into the second part of our time certain today, asking voters to renew the Fixing Our Streets 10 cent local gas tax and heavy vehicle use tax for another 4 years and refer it to the May 2020 ballot. As we learned from the previous presentation, Fixing Our Streets is having a tremendous impact on our city, and I'm proud to bring this referral before Council as your Transportation Commissioner. Staff will go into detail shortly on the projects and services the program will fund, as well as the outreach that we have conducted. Following the staff presentation, we'll move on to invited testimony from community groups and then public testimony. Mayor, we do have more than the requested four invited guests. We have planned this for a long time, but we've asked them to limit their comments to 2 to 3 minutes each. After public testimony, Council can ask staff to answer any questions that come up during testimony, and finally, we will vote on the resolution to refer the measure to the May election and the first reading of the ordinance that will enact the heavy vehicle use tax. Director Warner, once again.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for the introduction, and really thank you for your leadership. It's been a long road, but your leadership has been steadfast, and everybody at PBOT really appreciates it, so thank you. And thank the City Council, too, for all your support. This part of the presentation will really describe more in detail about the proposal for continuing Fixing Our Streets for an additional 4 years. We feel confident that the proposal that we are presenting today incorporates several of the important improvements to the existing Fixing Our Streets program. Really, the core principles behind Fixing Our Streets remains the same. This program is focused on basic maintenance and safety. Although Portland has been successful at receiving regional, state, federal funding for new projects, we constantly struggle to find adequate funding for basic maintenance and safety. The local gas tax and the heavy vehicle use tax has been essential to funding some of the core maintenance and safety needs that we have. Streets are like the roof of your house. Deferred maintenance allows water to get in under below the surface, causing damage and exponentially increasing the cost to repair our streets. Pave me now or pay me later. Engineering studies and Portland's own experience clearly documents the cost of inaction. It is estimated that for every dollar spent in early preventative maintenance, we can save $10 on costly reconstruction of existing streets. But we also pay an incalculable cost in the loss of life for every fatality we have. This underscores the need for continued safety improvements. The following slide shows the names of Portlanders killed on our streets in the last 3 years, in 2017, 2018, and 2019. Over this three-year period, 131 people have died in transportation-related crashes. PBOT is committed to Vision Zero. Funding for our Fixing Our Streets is essential in funding critical safety improvements and is also known to save lives. This slide also highlights another factor that is driving our investments in safety improvements in the renewal of Fixing Our Streets. Fatalities continue to be concentrated in East Portland and on the high crash network. Many of the streets currently lack adequate lighting and crossings, and those are prioritized in this program. In addition to the need to focus the resources on the high crash network and in East Portland, recent crash data continues to highlight the need to improve safety for pedestrians. Over the last 5 years, 40% of fatalities occurred to people walking and rolling in our streets. Our investments in providing adequate street lighting is one of the focused efforts to improve safety for pedestrians. For the moment, I'd like to turn it over to Noah Siegel, who's from PBOT, who's going to give you an overview of the Fixing Our Streets 2020-2024.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Noah Siegel. I'm the Interim Assistant Director of PBOT, and I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to provide an overview for the proposed Fixing Our Streets program for the years 2020 through 2024. This proposal represents the good work of our community and Bureau in developing a complete proposal that ensures we get the best return on our investments. PBOT, we just heard about fixing our streets the first round, and we've done a number of things to improve upon the initial program in this Fixing Our Streets program. First of all, as Commissioner Udaly was saying previously, the last time we did it was the first time, and so getting out of the gate, we had to do a lot of project developing and scoping, and that took about a year before we were out there really building the projects. That won't be the case this time. We've already begun developing and scoping these projects, and we'll be able to keep rolling right into 2021 if the measure passes. The auditor pointed out that the split of 56-44 on safety maintenance was very hard to track. All of our projects tend to have components of both safety and maintenance in them, and it became quite confusing. So we focused this, while we maintain the focus on those core values of safety and maintenance, we focused this proposal on specific outcomes, and we'll be walking those through with you in this presentation. We believe that these things combined will allow us to speed up delivery and a focus more on responsive projects that allow us to get out there and respond to Portlanders more quickly. In addition, we've improved on our reporting and incorporated independent financial audits to ensure oversight. We just completed our first of these annual financial audits. We do other auditing on project delivery and the like, but specifically on financial audits, it's up online on our website right now. We worked with the auditor's office to develop this practice and shared it with other bureaus, and I'm happy to say that we got a clean financial audit for this past year as well. All of our projects also will include our full ADA commitments under the law and have them incorporated into the cost estimates to reduce surprises. And we're really proud of our ability to deliver on that. So moving forward, this chart lays out how we're approaching fixing our streets 2020 through 2024. So you'll see the bottom two slices of the pie, smoother streets and safer streets, are both comprehensive lists of projects on both the maintenance and the safety side. You can see that full list in Exhibit D of the materials that are attached to the referral. But just to give you some general examples, on the smoother street side, you're looking at paving projects and street preservation projects, which will be on a lot of our greenways as well. And you can see the lists of safer streets projects on the right there. The third category above that we've created are community transportation services. And these are not defined by specific projects, but rather lists of things that frankly never end. And we're going to go as far as we can through them and make progress and be responsive. So those are things like potholes and larger potholes, which become sections of road repair called base repair, speed bumps, improved intersections, and the like. So we're really confident in the way that we've laid out this new program.
To go back
Hurst,
for just a second.
Of course.
Why did you name that Community Transportation Services? Because it doesn't feel like transportation services. It feels like basic maintenance for the most part.
So you mean as opposed to people moving through mobility?
Yeah.
I mean, we think of mobility and the right-of-way service that we do together as transportation. And so we were looking at sort of the things that enable good transportation and really focusing on things that are responsive to community. So I guess it's the word transportation that we think of differently.
I think it's the community transportation services that I'm just struggling with the title.
It's not
a big deal, but it just feels like
we struggled a little bit in what we called, but we really wanted to emphasize it was services and not necessarily specific projects. And so for the pothole, the base repair, so it's things that we do normally, but it would this money would enable us to do more.
And are these services that are like community-led, like the community comes and said, these are the things we want, or are these things that have been prioritized because this was work that you knew had to happen? I see Millicent's head going up and down for the first one.
Yeah. A lot of it's based on a lot of the planning and outreach that we currently do. So
thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, because that actually transitions nicely into the next slide, which is one of the really big differences between the first round of Fixing Our Streets and this one is we didn't have any of these plans in place when we did the first one. So we did our best to select projects and priorities that were responsive to the community, but frankly, we hadn't done all that work. And through these projects, these plans and reports that you're familiar with here, such as PED-PDX, Southwest in Motion, we've talked to thousands of Portlanders, and that's allowed us to draw from those reports and the highest priority projects and services and to design fixing our streets around those. So it's a huge advantage going in this time. And in addition to that, all of these reports allowed us to work through the equity matrix for PBOT investment, which didn't exist also the last time. And so we have more projects than we could build in 4 years. And so we take all of the great projects that we have, both on the maintenance and the safety side, and then we have a scoring through these plans that looks at income, concentrations of communities of color around the city, and need in marginalized parts of the city, and that shows up here on the map. And so the projects have been run through that additionally as part of our selection, and that's how we arrived at the final list. So all of that is new to this round of fixing our streets, and a real improvement for us, I think. This gets into a little bit more of the specifics. So as I was saying, we're really outcome-driven here. So the goals here, the outcomes we're looking for, are to reduce the backlog, save money, as Director Warren was saying previously, to improve our pavement condition index score, which is sort of the grade that we get on how we're doing with our pavement around the city, and wherever we can, also to get double wins, triple wins out of our project. So if we're out there paving, it should also be good for other modes as well. Same is true on safety projects. When we go out there, we look for where are those projects where we get the maintenance win at the same time. So this program, the Smoother Streets, breaks out into the two areas. Paving our busy streets, really a focus on those most heavily used streets, and then preserving the neighborhood streets that are most at risk of tipping over and becoming liabilities. So by intervening quickly, we save ourselves a lot of money. And like I was saying earlier, we overlaid this with our Greenway map so that we got a twofer out of it. So we preserved that street quality and created smoother streets for all modes. On the saving side, we're looking at outcomes that address the highest priority crossings, provide the highest number of blocks of sidewalks that we can address. And this is new in fixing our streets too, and it's been a high priority for all of us working together. An investment in provided adequate lighting along our high crash network, primarily in East Portland, and expanding our bike network through a series of improvements. These are the outcomes we'll be looking at. And you can see the investments here broken out by those categories. And you can see also in that second column, as we were mentioning earlier, the plans that undergird those project selections, which I think is one of the things that we feel is one of the greatest improvements in this round of fixing our streets. Again, in Exhibit D, you can actually go down and see which of the which projects are in which neighborhoods and so on. And we shared those project lists broadly with community as well. And finally, in the perhaps misnamed community transportation services, the outcomes that we're looking for are safer intersections, really slower speeds all around our neighborhood streets. Being responsive to potholes and road hazards, and revolving around permanently those gravel streets that are throughout our city. And here you can see it again, broken out by dollars and the plans that are supporting, as you were saying, Commissioner Hardesty, supporting those services. I'll turn it back to Director Warner on the heavy vehicle use tax.
Sure. Consistent with cost responsibility, Portlanders feel that it's important that heavy vehicles pay their fair share of the road improvements. PBOT developed a methodology to determine the charge to vehicles over 26,000 pounds using the principles of cost responsibility, which is embedded in the Oregon State Constitution. With the help of an outside consultant, we determined that 13% of the total revenue for Fixing Our Streets program should come from heavy vehicles. We are proposing, as I mentioned earlier, two changes to the existing heavy vehicle use tax program. First, our forecast indicates that the heavy vehicle use tax rate needs to be increased from 2.7% to 3% of the statewide weight mile taxes. In addition, we've included an automatic adjustment at the end of the second year to ensure that the revenue remains consistent between the 10-cent fuel tax and the heavy vehicle use tax. And the Fixing Our Street Oversight Committee continues to support the collaboration with the Portland Freight Committee to ensure the best use of these resources, the resources that are generated by the heavy vehicle use tax. The following is a proposed allocation of resources that was developed with the assistance of the Freight Advisory Committee and the Fixing Our Streets Oversight Committee. This funding will help allow the city to maintain some of the most important streets in the freight community. And the following map we have, and hopefully you'll get a, we have a bigger version of that, really shows the impact of the overall program, the Fixing Our Streets program. And included in this information is on our website. We have a summary materials available for Portlanders to see, and we've also translated many of those materials in the 10 most spoken languages. In closing, I'd really like to thank all the community groups that have been meeting with us over the past several months in order to bring this proposal back to you. I'm pleased to report that we have a strong endorsement from a number of these groups that really support City Council's referral to this, to the May primary ballot. And I guess just in ultimate closing, I think these are the council steps that Commissioner Udaly outlined, and so that's what we're asking for today. I guess I want to take a moment and just really thank the PBOT staff. It has been a long journey. And everyone from engineering to project delivery to project maintenance to communications, everyone has worked so hard to make this program successful, and I'm really proud of the work we've done. I want to especially recognize, when you recognize a few people, you leave some people out. I apologize to the people I'm leaving out. But I really want to thank Noah, who's really spearheaded the effort to get us to the next round. I also want to thank Mark Lear. Mark was 22 when we started this effort. And we've aged him a little bit, but it has been a very successful run, and I really appreciate that. And Steph Routh, who's been working with us over the past several months in terms of bringing all the communities together. And Hannah Schaefer, I know, is there's Hannah right there, in our communication shops that's been working on this. But I am so proud and so happy with the work we've been doing, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today. And so I think that we'll turn it over. We'll answer any questions now, but we'll turn it over to the invited testimony. So we're here for you.
Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm curious what your response would be. So this will be our second round with this temporary tax. What would your response be? I'm getting a lot of letters from people saying it's supposed to be temporary and now you're making it permanent. Are we making this a permanent tax?
No. This will be another 4 years.
Correct,
yeah.
And at the end of that 4 years, do we anticipate that we're going to be going back out to renew, or do we think that we will have a bigger handle on our maintenance needs and we will make some changes? And for, I'm asking you to look into the future, and I know it's an estimation, so sure. I promise not to hold you to what you say to the letter, but I'm curious as to what you're thinking.
In some ways, the voters will be the judge of whether or not we're successful in terms of implementing this program. I can tell you this 10 cents will not solve our maintenance backlog needs. It's not going to solve our safety needs. And perhaps the federal government will have, maybe it'll be Infrastructure Week, and we will get a whole bunch of new money from the federal government. But until then, we are going to work with the tools we have, and we look forward to having a conversation in 4 years on whether or not the Portlanders think it's a successful program.
Well, no, I appreciate that response, and that's probably the best response I could possibly get. I mean, the bottom line is that we will be judged based on what we do with the resources that we gather this time, right? Just like last time. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mayor.
Commissioner Udaly.
I just wanted to add a couple things. I mean, with any luck, gas tax will actually be diminishing returns because we need people to stop driving so much. User fees are too low to keep up with our needs, and demand is too high. Our backlog of maintenance is $1 billion, and this is only about $75 million every 4 years. So that would be a lot of renewals if we're only depending on the gas tax to catch up with that backlog.
Well said.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I might add to that, Commissioner, in response is that while the need is great and the funding is insufficient, every one of these projects makes a tremendous difference in people's lives. And so we sort of look at it at a project-by-project basis.
Absolutely.
And just get going on the work.
Yeah, it can't be all or nothing.
Right.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to invite up our first invited guest panel. We have Jess Thompson from Oregon Walks, Ken Marks from the Rosewood Initiative, and Richa Podel from the Street Trust. Welcome, everyone, and please make sure to state your name for the record when you begin.
My name is Jess Thompson. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the executive director of Oregon Walks. Oregon Walks is dedicated to promoting walking and making the conditions for walking safe, convenient, and attractive throughout Oregon. Oregon Walks is on the Vision Zero Task Force and partners with Safe Routes to School. We fully support the work that has already been done via Fixing Our Streets and support extending Fixing Our Streets in the future. We know walking and using mobility devices to get around are health, climate, and transportation solutions. What we hear from everyone we talk to in Portland is that there is a need for accessible, well-lit sidewalks that connect folks walking or using mobility devices to transit hubs, grocery stores, schools, places of worship, parks, community centers, restaurants, and to each other. The reality is too many people in Portland lack access to any sidewalks. Not only that, but we are in a desperate need of speed bumps, high visibility crosswalks, and improved signage. We need engineering solutions on high crash corridors to reduce speed, improve street lighting to make it easier for pedestrians, drivers, and cyclists to see one another, and enhance infrastructure such as pedestrian refuge islands. Fixing Our Streets will give the City of Portland's dedicated funding, give the City of Portland a dedicated funding stream to use towards these critical investments. We are encouraged, I'm going to just really focus on this as I close. We are really encouraged by PBOT's commitment to equity. It would like to specifically highlight the Office of Equity and Inclusion at PBOT. Under the leadership of Irene Marion, as champions of changes that are occurring within this department, we know communities in East Portland have been fighting for decades to have equitable pedestrian infrastructure investments realized. We are encouraged by the recent PED-PDX plan and community engagement process that prioritizes pedestrian investments in East Portland, and we celebrate that PBOT is committed to using an equity lens when deciding where to allocate Fixing Our Street funds moving forward. Thank you, and walk on.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and council members. My name is Kevin Marks. I'm the Director of Transportation Equity at the Rosewood Initiative in Outer East Portland. 4 years ago, I too was at this table urging council to refer a measure to the voters for the original Fix Our Streets. I did that even though I personally was dissatisfied with the percentage that East Portland received as part of the measure because I thought I was looking at the long game. I was looking at PBOT would have an opportunity to demonstrate their ability to deliver these projects, and that we would be looking at a Fix Our Streets 2.0, so that we would have the opportunity to work with PBOT and the commissioner's office to make 2.0 better. I am here today to say that I believe that has happened. I believe PBOT has demonstrated that they can deliver what they promised. It didn't start off smoothly, but it's definitely improved. And as Commissioner Hardesty said, there are a lot of good projects going into East Portland, projects that in 2014 we would have never believed were going to happen. Those were in the dark days of pre-HB 2017. PBOT has done an amazing job of delivery. PBOT has also, in this proposal and the commissioner's leadership, increased the percentage of the funds going towards East Portland. That is very significant because, as you all know, the people who are primarily being impacted by the deaths through crashes and through injuries are in East Portland. So our position at the Rosewood Initiative is in support of this particular measure. We encourage you to refer it to the voters. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Richa Podell. I'm the advocacy director at the Street Trust. We're an education advocacy organization working to improve conditions for walking, biking, and taking public transit. We at the Street Trust want to see all residents, especially those historically least served, share in the prosperity created by investments in active transportation, regardless of race and income. So I'm here to urge you all to ask voters to approve extending Fixing Our Streets revenue for another 4 years. While this funding is definitely not going to single-handedly solve our traffic fatality crisis, it is one small step towards a much larger amount of funding we should be planning to secure to reach zero fatalities due to traffic violence. As we all should be aware, in 2019, we saw 49 traffic fatalities in Portland, the highest number since 1997. We're failing our communities, especially knowing that our most marginalized communities are experiencing serious injuries and deaths at a much larger rate due to unsafe conditions for walking, cycling, and accessing transit. People are dying, our children and our elderly are dying. This is a crisis, and we need to be treating it as such. Fixing Our Streets has to date funded many crucial investments in our transportation system, sidewalks, safer routes to school, more street lighting. And this funding, even when for basic road maintenance, like pothole repair, does improve the safety and comfort of cyclists and pedestrians. And it's all connected. If someone's on a bicycle and had more visibility due to good lighting, they'd be better able to see some and avoid the potholes that might still remain in their area. So what I'm really here to say is this is a really small fraction of investments that are truly needed for us to reach zero fatalities on our roads and to create a multimodal system. So yes, send Fixing Our Streets to the voters, and also please exercise your leadership in ensuring that we are securing funds for the larger vision of streets where people in our city are no longer bound by fear to walk, ride to their bike to the places they feel that they should feel free to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, all three of you.
Now I'm looking for AD or William from Business for a Better Portland. Maurice Romming from Portland Business Development Group, and Paul Cohn from ProTech 17. All right, it's William Henderson.
It is I.
Welcome. Please state your name for the record. And
everybody's looking at you. So.
I guess I'm going first, huh?
Left to right.
All right.
People really like to go in the order they're called, so.
What's that?
People really like to go in the order they're called, so.
Great. Well, I'm William Henderson. I'm the guy who just walked up here. I run a company called Ride Report. It's a local company that works with transportation departments all around the world. Also was involved in getting started Business for a Better Portland, which has come out in support of renewing this funding source. So I'll just tell you a little bit about my own perspective on the first Fixing Our Streets Fund. We know that we're at an ever-increasing risk of falling permanently behind on fixing our streets. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but revenue is one of the first things that comes to mind. We know that there's ever-increasing car traffic problems. We know that we have continued loss of life and limb on our roadways. And we have a mounting disaster of climate change. And all of these threaten our city's economic vitality, the values that we hold as Portlanders, and some of Portland's best qualities. But I also want to call out a particular thing that I think is more subtle, but we also risk losing, and that is our sense of optimism. We risk losing our confidence that we can actually come together as Portlanders and overcome these challenges. And to me, that's why the passage of a Fixing Our Streets in 2016 was a breath of fresh air. A lot of people said it couldn't be done. And it affirmed that we hadn't lost that spirit of optimism, that we could actually get together and do something. So I can tell you, as a CEO, an advocate, father of two, it's not always easy to see the progress and feel that sense of optimism. We get busy. You know, when I hear for the second and third time of an employee who almost gets hit crossing the street outside our office, it's a little bit hard to feel optimistic. Or if I am reading over and over again about people dying or being injured on the streets in East Portland, it's hard to feel that optimism. It's hard to feel optimism just at a personal level when I'm riding my bike to school with a kid on the back and don't feel safe. But fortunately, I got involved with Business for Better Portland. I got to serve on the Fixing Our Streets Committee, and I learned how much work goes into delivery of every single one of these projects. And I just think it's amazing and commendable the work that the Bureau has done. They had to hit the ground running. They had to build new capacity. They had to deliver unbelievable number of projects to meet a huge need. And I've also learned a lot about how much rigor and consideration goes into every single one of these projects. Particularly, I want to call out how many of these projects target historically underserved neighborhoods and the use of minority and woman-owned contractors to do the work. That's been done with a level of accountability and data-driven decision-making that, as a business owner, I find inspiring. So it's not always easy to see the progress. It's hiding in the details, but if you look closely, it's there. And I'm asking you right now, don't stop now. We're just getting started with this thing. The results are just beginning to show. Maybe you have to look closely to see them, but they're there. And we now have the capacity to do a lot more. So please, let's affirm this progress, recommit ourselves, and feed that sense of optimism that we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for allowing us to speak today. I'm Maurice Romming. I'm a member of Professional Business Development Group. We focus on minority issues as far as it pertains to construction and women to make sure that we have equitable outcomes on our projects, both on the city and through our state. Change is slow, and we are so impressed by what happened here. To go from 20% to 40% is truly amazing. And to continue to have that go forward, PBDG is proud to support this measure because we know that it takes a lot of work. It takes the work that of all you all up there. It also takes the work of, it takes a lot of your staff. PBOT has really changed the way that they do business. We are proud of that change, and we look forward to continue to work for you. I agree that we can continue to look at the data, continue to have the movement move forward. If we think about it, if we were to hit 40% on all the projects that are brought up in front of you, what amazing outcomes we would have. So we are supportive of this. We look forward to working and continue to work with you guys on these issues. And we recognize that with PBOT staff, they have really worked hard to communicate with the community, go to meetings where we are at, and inform us of the opportunities. So again, thank you, and you have our support.
Thanks, Maurice.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. It's good to see you again. My name is Paul Cohn, and I'm the Portland Chapter President for the Professional and Technical Employees Local 17, otherwise known as ProTech 17. Our union supports the referral of the Fixing Our Streets renewal to the voters on the May ballot. As you know, we represent over 900 City of Portland employees, including many who work either directly on the Fixing Our Streets projects or on programs connected to these projects. So our members are proud of the service that they provide to Portlanders and greatly respect the money that is entrusted with them by taxpayers. We believe that Fixing Our Streets has been an excellent example of the city successfully delivering on promises made to voters. Over the past 4 years, funding from Fixing Our Streets has allowed PBOT to complete many important safety and maintenance improvements across the city that improve transportation quality, equity, and access. And importantly, PBOT has successfully delivered the original list of projects proposed and has been able to leverage additional funding for some of these projects to make higher levels of improvements than initially outlined. The results have clearly improved the transportation infrastructure of the city. While Fixing Our Streets has made significant headway, as you heard already, into addressing critical infrastructure needs, we feel that there's a lot more work needed. As an organization committed to addressing economic and social justice issues, kind of a fundamental thing with unions. We believe that equitable access to safe and transportation is vital to our community. So in the proposal for continuing to fix our streets, PBOT, they've done an excellent job of assembling a program that will continue to improve safety and mobility for all Portlanders. And we applaud their work giving attention to traditionally underserved and disadvantaged communities. Our members are looking forward to continuing to make progress towards a safer and more equitable transportation future for Portland, and we hope that you'll agree that the voters should have an opportunity to renew the funding for fixing our streets in order to move this towards these important goals. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, all three of you.
Okay. Our third and final panel is Brett Morgan.
I just hand it to Carla. Yeah. She'll make sure she gets it to all of us.
Brett Morgan from 1000 Friends of Oregon, Heather Williams, who is an East Portland resident, and Lindsay Dorm, also from East Portland. Welcome, and please state your name for the record, and any of you can begin.
Thank you. Mayor Wheeler, members of the Portland City Council, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Fixing Our Streets 2. My name is Brett Morgan, and I work as the Metro Advocacy Manager for 1000 Friends of Oregon. 1000 Friends of Oregon seeks to create healthy, affordable, safe, and livable communities through smart land use and planning, and we strongly believe Fixing Our Streets 2 aligns with these value and work and should be referred to the voters. To begin, one of the most important considerations in Fixing Our Streets 2 is that it intentionally seeks to address the decades of under- and disinvestment in East and North Portland communities, which have tended to have the largest communities of Black, Indigenous, communities of color, and other marginalized groups. This intentional equity framing and investments in contracting is critical in ensuring all Portland is healthy, affordable, safe, and livable. We want to commend the City of Portland for continuing down this path with Fixing Our Streets 2. Fixing Our Streets 2's top-level goal of ensuring our roadways are safe and well-maintained makes transportation safer for everyone, yes. But the real magic comes from the investments that are happening beyond our roadways. There is a wealth of research that shows when you offer a broad range of sustainable multimodal transportation options, folks drive less, walk and bike more, ride transit more, air is cleaner and clearer. Children even perform better in schools when they have a range of ways to get there safely, just to name a few benefits. The pedestrian and other active transportation investments in lighting, sidewalks, greenways, crossings all make up the base blocks of a transportation system that works for all Portlanders. But these benefits only happen when we prioritize, intentionally plan for, and invest in diverse and sustainable transportation options. I will add that the improvements in Fixing Our Streets 2 are among the many policy options we need to continue to prioritize to create healthy, livable, and safe communities. Other priorities being upzoning and increasing density, especially along transit lines, strong and effective anti-displacement policies, transit service and infrastructure improvements, access to natural areas, and many other priorities and policies that are needed in conjunction with Fixing Our Streets 2 to realize what Portland can be. I will close by saying these investments demonstrate a vision of Portland that is for everyone, where folks can walk around the community safely, where bikers can share the road with cars, and yes, a Portland less dependent on our cars in general. Every community in Portland deserves to have these things, and Portland deserves the investments in Fixing Our Streets, too. 1000 Friends of Oregon strongly endorses referring Fixing Our Streets, too, to the Portland voters so they can take action on the needs in the community now. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. My name is Heather Jackson. I actually need to correct the record from Williams, and I'm here in support of Fixing Our Streets, too. I'm here as a Northeast Portland resident and a mom. Two-thirds of my family are so-called vulnerable users. My husband and I bought a house, got married, had a baby 6 years ago, all in the same year. And we bought in Madison South because it met our two main criteria, access to the MAX station and affordability. My husband is a white cane user. And our six-year-old son, Chester, has learning challenges and likes to run. My husband has excellent orientation and mobility skills, and he's super active. And because I work full-time, my husband is the one that takes Chester to school and picks him up. And they love going on adventures around the city together. My son's favorite things are pots and pans and buses and trains. So despite me having all the confidence in the world in my husband's blind skills, I am still a massive ball of anxiety when the two of them are out and about together on their adventures. It's like two of my vital organs are out walking around, like my heart and, I don't know, my spleen. Is the spleen even vital? Which one would it my husband be? Yeah.
We so, don't know.
We'll just leave it there.
Management out, so it's not like your
So my husband has been hit by cars several times in the past few years, and luckily not seriously injured, thank goodness, good. Thank the baby Jesus, but and luckily our son was not with him either at the time. But they often have to cross 82nd Avenue. Sorry, I know that's a sore subject.
No.
Thank you. And thank you, by the way. I really wanted to commission you daily for your support and your work on trying to bring that juggernaut into the city's jurisdiction. That makes a big difference, and keep up the good work. Regardless, the most convenient crossing from our house is, you know, on 82nd at a poorly marked crosswalk where my husband routinely holds his hand up and says, don't kill me, until he gets to the safe island in the middle. And, you know, crossing aside, just walking to the MAC station on 82nd from our house is an adventure all on its own, as we encounter, you know, these 45-degree curb ramps that lead right onto 82nd, or sidewalks without curbs at all that just kind of slope onto 82nd Avenue. And not to mention the fun street furniture like scooters and shopping carts. So our choices are taking the so-called scenic route through the neighborhood versus the fast route up 82nd, and the trade-off between no sidewalks on many of our neighborhood streets or sidewalks that mysteriously dump you onto 82nd. Those are our choices. In a few years, my husband and son will have to cross 82nd twice a day when my son starts middle school in Roseway. And safe routes to school is going to be our lifeline. And zebra stripes, and pedestrian crossing signals, and well-maintained sidewalks along other busy streets, too, not just 82nd, you know, Gleason, Burnside, Halsey, Holgate, et cetera. These are the streets in our day-to-day landscape that connect us to our friends and our community. So it's these small improvements that make a huge difference in my family's life. And we love the idea of art and beautification projects, but it's the little small, wonky, non-sexy projects that can mean the difference between, you know, life and death for my family. So thank you for listening to my story, and thank you so much for your support of Fixing Our Streets, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for your time. My name is Lindsay Dorm, and I'm here in support of Fixing Our Streets, too. I have been a Portland resident the majority of my life, minus some time living on the East Coast. I always knew that when my vision got worse, that I would come back to Portland because the public transportation is great and that the city has kind of this grid layout. 3 years ago, my husband and I decided to buy a house. We wanted to get the most for our money, which meant living in East Portland, but since I knew that the transportation wasn't super great and it wasn't very lit, we decided to buy a very small house as close as we could get to the city, which is right off of 82nd. And I do know that 82nd is not in the city's jurisdiction, but it's in my jurisdiction. Also, within that 3 years' time, I had a baby. I quit my job and decided to be a stay-at-home mom, which is the hardest job I have ever had in my life. It's really important for me to be independent and to do activities with my child. So since I cannot drive, I take the bus. And I take my three-year-old daughter to school, to dance, to music, to whatever activity I can think of, the library. And our options are to cross 82nd at a very poor crossing. I find myself many times walking out towards the street first with her hand behind me, making sure that the car will stop, or walking up 82nd to the MAX, which is terrible, or just like Heather had said, I could walk down a side street that has no sidewalks and has many potholes. It's really important for me to be in our city and to get to places that can connect me to people in my community and to get there safely. I'm not interested in fancy projects. I just want to feel safe when myself and my daughter walk through our neighborhood to get to the city. And I know that there are many other people like me, a person with a disability, a mother, a person of color, who wants to get to our activities and to be a part of our community safely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Thanks, all three of you. Commissioner Daly.
I want to thank everyone who came as invited to provide invited testimony today, but I want to especially thank Heather and Lindsay. When I balked at the 9 people that we were for invited testimony, staff said, they're great panels, and you have to hear from these East Portland residents. And I want to thank you for sharing your stories. The personal lived experience from members of our community is really the most compelling testimony we can hear. You may or may not know that my son is in a wheelchair, so I also have challenges navigating the city, and I know what it's like to feel that your heart is walking around outside of your body. And don't ever shy away from criticizing 82nd Avenue or any other road in this city. I'm fully aware of the shortcomings of both, you know, PBOT and ODOT, but just for everyone else's benefit, 82nd Avenue, along with many of our other high-crash corridors, are owned by Oregon Department of Transportation, and that means that we largely can have nothing to do with safety standards, maintenance, or speed limit. And as you know, for quite some time, long before I ever came here, we have been working with ODOT to try to transfer jurisdictional transfer, which I hope will happen, but they're going to have to invest a lot of money in that roadway before that happens. We have to understand the needs of users across the entire spectrum. And with transportation, unfortunately, we have largely just been serving the middle. And that means that our most vulnerable users are put at unnecessary risk, and it's absolutely unacceptable. And the beauty of designing a transportation system that meets the needs of the extreme of the spectrum of users is that it's better for everyone. So I want to thank you, and I feel like I'm going to be camped out on 82nd Avenue making sure that your husband and you and your daughter are safe. Now I have 4 hearts walking around. Just be safe out there, and we're really moving as fast as we can.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Colleagues, before we move on to testimony, I need to ask you if you will please accept the substitute draft of Exhibit A1 that was, I think, provided to everyone.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion Commissioner Fritz, a second from Commissioner Hardesty to accept the substitute. Any further discussion? Call the roll on the substitute.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. Substitute's on the table. Thank you. Public testimony, Carla. How many people do we have signed up?
We have 11.
We're going to have to do 2 minutes each because we have other items after this, and I don't want to lose the quorum. So if you could keep your remarks.
I'm going to be losing the quorum pretty soon.
I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Okay, good. First three, please.
First three, please, coming up are Terry Parker, Mike Albrecht, and Pia Welch.
Great, thank you. And I know some of you are truncating your talking points as you are walking to the podium, and I appreciate that. Thank you for your understanding. Terry, do you want to start? You're an old pro at this.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Terry Parker, speaking for the under and non-represented. The saga of the 10-cent gas tax can be depicted as funding the good, the bad, and the ugly. This story starts with the absence of equity for motorists. 1 2-axle bus does as much damage to the streets and roads as 1,200 cars. On 82nd Avenue alone, TriMet makes 223 trips a day. It would take over 267,000 cars in a 24-hour period to do the same damage. Motorist-paid tax dollars are fleeced to subsidize both transit and pave the way for privileged infrastructure for bicyclists that escape paying user fees. Additionally, PBOT citizen committees are non-inclusive of motorist representation. Starting in reverse order with the ugly, Peabot has obviously been making scores of requests for plastic straws. The supersized straw-like posts are popping up and littering the streets everywhere. Right-of-ways now look like full-time disheveled construction zones. Funding the bad is accomplished by removing or narrowing full-service traffic lanes on busy corridors. Doing so increases congestion, fuel consumption, and emissions. Both out of Northeast Gleason and Northeast 102nd north of Halsey are an absolute mess. Transportation dollars have been wasted. Likewise, the lanes on the Halsey-Weiser Couplet are so narrow, TriMet buses cannot even stay within the lines, thereby creating safety hazards for all drivers. Saving the best for last is the good. This includes funding for better street lighting to augment the LED conversions that offer only shadow lighting, more paving to keep the streets well-maintained, new signal systems, hopefully timed to reduce congestion, and more crosswalks with rapid flashing beacons. New sidewalks are also included, but to establish equity, so should removing the financial burden from property owners for repairing older crumbling sidewalks. Here's the bottom line. Equity needs to be resolved with proportional motor-specific representation on all PBOT committees. The ugly and the bad should not be funded. The good with sidewalk justice must be the primary area focus of renewal, if renewal is to pass the muster with taxpaying motorists. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Very efficiently done.
Thank you. Short. My name is Mike Albrecht. I'm a member of the Portland Freight Committee. Also, I sat on the Fixing Our Streets Oversight Committee for the first 2 years. In every meeting that I go to, I always hear the word equity. And although I'm opposed to the heavy vehicle use tax, the trucking industry in Oregon is already the highest taxed and feed business in any state in the union. But getting back to equity, the city council wants to impose this tax, and there's no contingency on voter approval of the 10 cent a gallon tax. What I'm asking is, no matter if it's 2.7% or 3% increase, please make it equitable and make it contingent on the voter approval of the 10 cent gallon tax. That's it.
Thank you, and thanks for your service on the committee. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. I'm here as the past chair and vice chair of the Portland Freight Committee. I am employed by Federal Express. In good faith, because the transportation bill had not been passed, we worked together with Commissioner Novak and staff to come up with a temporary way of receiving additional monies for transportation projects. And that's how the heavy vehicle user tax came into existence. It was easily administrated because it was a tax on another tax. This agreement has now come to its agreed upon natural end with 4 years. With the passage of the 2017 transportation bill, the vehicle mile tax increased for trucks by 52%. The Portland Bureau of Transportation has already been the yearly recipient of these monies and is in control on how these monies are spent. We are not aware of any in-depth analysis or justification as to why the continuation of this tax is needed and why the tax should be increased. We continue to look forward and working in concert for sustainable and fair funding streams for the maintenance of the city streets.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
All three of you. Next three, please, Carl.
Are Christine Logue, Ted Schwenk, and Lanny Gower.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. Would you like to start, please?
Sure. I'm Christine Logue with the Oregon Trucking Association, and I'm providing testimony written by Jana Jarvis, who is president and CEO of the Trucking Association. She was not able to be here today. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you concerning extending the Portland heavy vehicle use tax. Since there have been some changes on the Portland City Council, I think it will be helpful to have some background on the development of this tax. In 2016, as Portland was facing scrutiny from its citizens over the state of many of the city's streets, Commissioner Novak brought a proposal for a city gas tax referral to council. His stated rationale for this tax was that it has a short-term fix to address the most immediate issues since the legislature had failed to pass a transportation package in 2015, and the revenue that Portland was receiving was not enough to address the problem. Council agreed, and it was put on the May ballot where Portland citizens approved it. Just prior to the May ballot, Commissioner Novick came to council with another plan to include heavy trucks that currently do not pay gasoline or diesel taxes. There had been a work group and a variety of meetings that included members from the trucking industry, but eventually Commissioner Novick settled on assessing a premium on the weight mile taxes that the trucking industry pays to the state. The rationale for creating this tax was that the city had a cost responsibility to assess this because the state formula requires an increase in weight mile taxes when gasoline taxes are raised. There is no requirement for a local jurisdiction to apply cost responsibility when they assess a local gas tax. This plan was met with opposition from the trucking industry since there is simply no correlation between the amount of business conducted within the state and the volume of business with the city. Nonetheless, council approved this tax, which was stated to be a four-year fix to an immediate problem. In 2017, the Oregon legislature passed the largest transportation package in the state's history. The trucking industry supported the package, even though it raises our weight mile tax burden 53% when fully implemented. Oregon currently has the highest tax and fee burden of any of the 50 states and is 30% higher than California, which has the second highest taxes. I have a chart I'll provide you. I'm done.
Thank you.
I'll provide this.
Yeah, and if you do give that to Carla, then we can get a copy of the full presentation as well.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler. I'm Todd Schwenk. I'm the Regional Safety Manager with Old Dominion Freight Lines.
Thank you.
And Commissioners, thank you. I'm also here on behalf of my company I'm employed by and the Oregon Trucking Association in opposition of this tax. Plain and simple, we're being double taxed. We agreed to this initially with the Trucking Association as it was a short-term tax. As House Bill 2017 had not passed, it has since passed. There's $17 million in additional funding that came to the city because of that. And I watched Director, is it Warner? He showed slides. And his first slides of what that money was used for, there was no indication that that directly helped the trucking industry. We paid our fair burden, and now we're being asked to be double taxed again. Commissioner Fritz Hardesty, you were talking about affordable housing. You increase the burden on taxation to the trucking industry. That goes directly to the cost of transportation. That goes directly to the cost of affordable housing. Those costs go up because transportation costs go up. That's it.
Thank you.
So I got a quick question.
Yes.
What do you say to our $1 billion backlog in road repair?
I say that we need to make sure that the funding for repairs is evenly split amongst users. Clearly, the trucking industry stays on heavy truck corridors. We don't generally go on all the streets in the city of Portland. We're being asked to pay for all those.
Actually, yeah. I disagree with that. I mean, you're on the main streets, which is where we're doing a lot of investment of these dollars. So, I mean, we can argue about whether or not 2.7 or 3%, whether one time for 4 years or doing it again for 8 years is the right thing to do. But I just want you to know that, of course, trucks, big trucks, so we have a lot of much bigger trucks, like with two and three cars that are coming into communities nowadays. We didn't used to have those size trucks. Those trucks have an impact on our roads, and we're all in this together. And if we're all in it together, if people are paying it, why wouldn't the trucking industry be paying it?
Mileage in this state is proportionate to heavy truck corridors. That's the interstate roads. Smaller trucks use the city streets. Absolutely, we have truck corridors that have to travel to get certain types of goods to locations. But as a percentage, heavy trucks are on heavy truck corridors. That's where all the mileage is at.
I guess we may agree to disagree on that, but thank you. That's why I wanted you to answer that question.
No, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Council. I'd like to thank you for the time to speak today. My name is Lanny Gower. I'm with XPO Logistics. We're also an interstate trucking firm similar to Old Dominion. So I'm going to try and limit my comments. I've submitted this in writing, but so I'll try and limit to some areas that maybe won't be covered by other people. I'm a tax manager, so I do the local taxes and operating taxes for every state in the United States and Canada. My comments on the tax are going to be on the taxing mechanism. This tax is an extremely difficult tax for the city to make sure that the taxpayers it's designed to hit will get hit. And that is one thing we look for. If we're going to pay the tax, we want to know our competitors are paying the tax. The trucking industry is fragmented with thousands of very small one and two truck owner operators or small companies. There is no way for the city of Portland to know if a guy in Washington with two trucks and is making occasional deliveries in Portland is registering or paying any of this tax. My company, his company, other companies here today are reporting what is basically a voluntary tax. It is at a higher rate than it should be because our competitors are not paying it, and the city has no way to ensure that they do pay that we have seen. One of the other things on this tax that I look at is, I believe this, and I'm not a lawyer, but I've studied tax law throughout the United States and cases on it. I believe this tax would fail a challenge under the Commerce Clause. Numerous other city, state taxes similar to this have been challenged, have failed, and I believe this would, because my company that operates 5 million miles in Oregon and only 68,000 miles in Portland pays $27,000 in this tax. Another company that operates in just Portland runs the same 4.5 million miles in Oregon, but all of them in Portland, pays the same $27,000 that I pay for 68,000 miles in the city of Portland. And I believe it would not pass that challenge. I'll end my comments because my time's out.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, all three. Next three, please, Carla.
Next three are Diane D'Autremont, Christine Kennedy, and Jeff Lorenzini.
Thank you for being here. Good afternoon.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Would you like to start, please?
Sure, I will. Mayor and councilors, thank you for listening to us today. My name is Diane D'Autremont. I am the president and an owner of Lyle International Companies. We're a relocation and logistics company with 8 locations in Washington and Oregon. We're also a second-generation, woman-owned business serving the Oregon market for over 60 years. Of our 4 Oregon locations, one is located in Tualatin and serves the Portland area. With the current structure of the Portland weight mile tax, we pay tax on all Oregon miles, although less than 20% of our shipments have pickup or delivery locations in the Portland area. Coupled with our payment of Oregon weight mile tax, then, we're subsidizing Portland roads and bridges at a significantly disproportionate rate when compared to our usage, which I believe is unfair. We also believe that to approve a tax on a temporary basis and then come back at its sunset to change it to a permanent tax is disingenuous and poor policy. We were told that the tax was an emergency measure needed for immediate repairs because the state had failed to pass an adequate transportation package. Since then, the legislature has passed HB 2017, which provides has in the last several years provided between $10 to $17.5 million for the city of Portland, and will continue to provide $17.5 million from 2023. forward. It's already been mentioned that our industry pays the highest registration use and tax fees in the nation, 84% more than is being paid by the average in all 50 states. We've seen significant other increases in all our major costs associated with our business. And with an average operating ratio in our industry of about 5 to 7% dollars left, these kind of increases are making it really, really hard for us to stay in business. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Christine Kennedy. I think I brought a little bit more personal to this. I wasn't prepared, so I'll just talk about what we do. And then I got really excited when Commissioner Hardesty asked about, I forget your exact question, but I do want to make it clear that The people that are getting hit by this tax is the over 26,000, and I want to just give you a little perspective on that. I can put 7 5,000-pound excavators on one of my trailers and only have one truck on the road. If I'm the one that's going to be penalized, then my competitors will just go and put 1 5,000-pound excavator on one trailer, and there'll be 7 smaller trucks with trailers behind them on the road, and we don't want that because they're not professionals, some of them, and they haven't gone through the rigmarole that we have to do this. I bring two perspectives to this. I am a trucking company owner. I'm also a small women-owned DBE, emerging small business, and I went through the process of getting my loan. I worked with PCC Small Business in 2013 and was successful in doing that. I went through all of the spreadsheets and tried to figure out the cost of a trucking company, and I could never have got to the point of understanding the taxes that we were going to be hit with. I pay $15,000 a month in PUC and road use assessment fees. When I went into business, I paid myself $40,000 a year. So you can go and do some math on what I'm paying per year. And also, the state of Oregon already penalizes us for higher weight mile tax, as I talked about, putting more excavators and more things on one truck. So anyway, I had a lot more to say, but I'll stop there.
Thanks a lot. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Jeff Lorenzini with Old Dominion Freight Line. I was here 4 years ago at the initial meeting for the FOS, and I must say, please don't take the low turnout here for granted. Our industry was torn between being two places today, but I would tell you that the mission that PBOT has outlaid for the FOS initiatives is not dishonorable, but this is not equitable for our industry. We use 14% of the road, and we're currently paying 30% of the revenue, and that's going to become more disproportionate if this is raised. As well, not to rehash, but this was supposed to be a temporary fix. HB 2017 is undoubtedly going to provide additional funds for transportation, and if well prioritized over a period of time, I believe can address the pressing issues that need to be addressed. One thing that has not been stated in any of the presentation, and I haven't heard any comment on this yet, what is happening in our industry with e-commerce is there's a greater amount of shipments that are being delivered by non-trucking companies. And right next to my business, the former Portland Meadows horse track has been sold to a company for a large fulfillment center. That fulfillment center is going to have 1,365 parking places as proposed. And it needs so many parking places because small cars and vans are going to be making deliveries instead of trucks. That's putting more vehicles on the road to do the same thing that lesser trucks would do, and yet we are paying the greater burden of the road tax.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Next three, please.
The last two who signed up are Jed Calvin and Tim Love.
Good afternoon, Council. Thank you for hearing me. I'm here today almost by chance, and as such, I wasn't aware that this issue was on the agenda today. But as a concerned environmentalist, I have to speak out. I'm sympathetic to the struggle of the hardworking truckers that we've heard from today. No doubt their tireless effort supports the infrastructure on which we all depend. But our dependence on this infrastructure is flawed at its core. Our dependence on the planet is much more critical. Forward-thinking individuals must support this and any measure that de-incentivizes fossil fuel consumption and make the alternatives more attractive in comparison. As we've heard from these hardworking people, change hurts sometimes, but we will not have a future if it isn't fossil fuel free.
Would you put your name into the record, please?
Judd Calvin.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And my name is Tim Love.
Mayor, Council, thank you for, Commissioners, I mean, thank you for listening to us. My peers have primarily said everything really there is to say on this. The only thing I would add is the company I work for, we've been in Portland since 1938, and we have branches and equipment throughout the state. In fact, the vast majority of our equipment is outside of the city of Portland. But this tax, as unfair as it is, we pay on all the miles we drive in Central Oregon, in Medford, across the state. I pled this case with Commissioner Novick back in 2016 when we were going through this. So really, that's all I had to add.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty.
I asked a question before you leave.
Sure.
So say that again. So your company travels all over the state of Oregon. This is a city-specific tax. And you're saying that you're paying tax on all the miles that you drive in the state?
All throughout the state. We're paying on our weight mile taxes, so it's a bulk number, so we're paying on all those miles. 75% of my product leaves on state highways out of Portland. It doesn't run around the city here. It leaves, which many of these trucking companies have bases here, and they get on the interstates, and they're out. They're not running around on city streets. And I think as our industry goes, that's our biggest complaint about this is, hey, we'll pay our fair share. We're taking a 53% increase over the next 5 years, I believe, under House Bill or the Highway Fund from 2017 already. We accepted that and we'll take it because that's, you know, we need to pay our fair share. We're not opposed to that, but we want to pay our fair share, and that goes for our share in Portland too. I think it would be a lot more tolerable if there was a way, and I'm not sure that there is, to tax us on the use of the roads within the city.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that clarification. Thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you both. Commissioner Daly.
Yeah, Mayor, I'd like to have staff return to the table. Yeah. So I just want to share some facts as we know them. We just heard a bunch of numbers out of context that sound pretty alarming. You were around when this heavy vehicle use tax was developed. I wasn't, so I'm going to rely on you for some historic context. But the reality is Portland relies on funding from federal government, state, and local sources, and it is not keeping up with either the current demand or the massive backlog of maintenance and repair we have. It's true the legislature did raise revenues in 2017, but it still wasn't sufficient. And I also understand there's no adjustment for inflation, so kind of diminishing returns. And that's why fixing our streets as well as the heavy vehicle tax is needed. Can you speak to some of the concerns raised? Specifically, we're paying taxes to use roads that aren't in Portland. Like, we're being taxed on all roads we're using, not just in Portland. And that we only use 14% of the roadway, but we are paying 30% of the revenue. And then I think another relevant detail is how much of the impact are they creating? Because obviously trucks have a greater impact than single occupant vehicles.
Right. Yeah, I can try to piece together a little bit of that. I'm not sure the difference, the 14 and the 30%. I think the state weight mile tax roughly is around 30% of what the state gas tax is in terms of cost responsibility. When we, in 2016, when we had an economist come in, what they said, instead of the 30% that normally they pay, that they thought because there's less driving on the streets of Portland, so that number, that's where you get the 13%. So in terms of the total kind of, wear and tear on the roads, instead of the 30 to 35% they pay at the state, our economists said probably 13%. So that's why basically cars are paying, in terms of the cost responsibility model, 87% of what it would be, and the heavy trucks are paying 13%. One of the things that we'd looked at in terms of trying to figure out a way to have some kind of fairness in terms of what the tax was looking at perhaps a diesel tax for those trucks, but it was discovered at the time there's really only one place that sold it, and so we would disadvantage that one big truck stop here. So that's one of the reasons we look for other funding mechanisms, because I think what council had communicated to us at the time is that they wanted trucks to also be paying part of this within the city of Portland, a lower level than they are at the state, and so that's how we came up with this. So in terms of saying this was going to be a one-time thing and part of the deliberations, I don't think that was the case, that we were going to do that until the state came up with another package. I think it was more linked to what the light cars were paying and whether or not there would be some kind of commensurate fee paid by the trucks. That was my recollection of the discussion that we had in 2016.
And there is a requirement that each pay in a fair share, yeah, right? So what if we tried to pass fixing our streets and just got rid of the heavy vehicle tax?
We could do that. We could only tax light vehicles. But that would be probably, I think what we found in discussing, and one of the things that we liked all users to pay. So that was one of the reasons that we brought forward and want to make clear, this is not a permanent tax. I think one of the speakers said this is another 4 year. It would be another 4 year, the heavy vehicle use fee, and not a permanent renewal.
Okay.
So Mark,
identify yourself.
Mark Clear, Portland Bureau of Transportation. Just a couple quick thoughts on this. One, you know, Oregon taxpayers, Oregon citizens, residents, voters have twice, passed constitutional requirements at the state level. Again, the principle we're applying to local level, but have said that it's really important when we're raising revenue, you heard that sort of from trucks too, that they're willing to pay, but it's been really important to Portland, to Portlanders for decades, that when we're raising revenue, we see some of this balance. Again, at the state level, constitutionally required, we're requiring it here sort of based on principle, but it has been shown to be really important.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
That was not
clear
to me.
Okay. A second thing, I guess I just put out there, just a couple data points. One, you know, right now, the biggest companies that are traveling a lot are paying, a significant amount of this fee, but 85% of those that pay the fee, there's about 700 that pay, but 85% of those that pay less than $67 a month. So the relative cost, right, to some of those smaller firms, and they are paying, and we appreciate those resources for these important services, is relatively small. Mm-hmm. All things considered.
So just so you know, you can't see behind you, but there are people that are about to pass out in their seats when you said that. I'm looking at the truckers, and they're all about to just drop over.
Right.
They're not having the experience that you are articulating.
Yeah, well, my numbers come from, working with the revenue office. I'd be happy to share, some with those numbers as well. I mean, there are a few companies that are traveling a lot, making a lot of weight mile, that are paying a significant amount, and there's a lot of companies that what their 3% is a much smaller number. I'm happy to share that information with the freight community as well. The other thing is we have an appeals process. We've worked with the freight community on this piece of it. For these companies that can show that their overall mileage, if they're just based here and they're traveling a ton of miles in other places, and they show that less than 1% of their miles for their company are on our city streets, and they have logs, they can do this, then they have a 50% reduction in what they're paying. So we want to balance that, right, because we don't want to give so much exemptions to one place that we have to hit other parts of the freight community more, but we've set up an appeals process to try to make that work the best that we can. I guess the other piece would be is, it's really hard to find the perfect tax in these kinds of situations. So we've been really open to the freight community, as Director Warner was saying. We tried a bunch of different options before we got to this option. We've consistently asked the freight community if you have a better approach for a way of coming up with your 13%, $11 million of this total proposal, that we've been open to that. We just haven't found a better proposal at this point as a way of collecting these revenues.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Udaly,
I'll just say one more thing. I mean, the question, I would want to ask a similar question to them. I mean, somebody has to pay to build and maintain roadways. We're not getting the funding that we need from the federal and state government. The next place to look to are users, and users are not fully funding our roadways. We're not asking them to do that. but we are asking for a fair share. And I appreciate you clarifying some of those issues. I was very surprised to hear that people were paying our local tax to drive on roads outside of Portland when I know our appeals process is in place to prevent that from happening.
Millicent, you look like you want to say something.
No, I don't.
Okay. I have a question. Could you address the issue that House Bill 2017 already provides the disparate funding from the trucking industry?
I mean, just one quick thing is, you know, with cost responsibility in Oregon, when truck taxes go up, the reason that they're going up is because motor light vehicle taxes, gas taxes, registration fees, and those other things are going up. So, you know, it's hard, and I get it. I mean, they're really, you know, hard challenges on the freight community, and the freight community is an essential part of our economy. It provides a bunch of middle-wage jobs. I mean, it's really important, and it's really important that we work as closely as we can and try to get this stuff right. But the upshot is, because taxes hadn't been increased for so long, those increases are significant. But the, you know, the ratio that Chris talked about as far as cost responsibility between light vehicles and heavy vehicles is basically the same. So when their costs are going up, you know, dramatically, we're doing the same thing. And that's part of what happens when you fall behind. It takes a lot more action to catch up. And so I think that's a little bit what you're seeing here.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you so much for that clarification. So do we get our fair share of transportation dollars from the state of Oregon? So even with the bill passed, are we getting our fair share of those dollars? Do we get the appropriate allocation based on how is it allocated? What is it based on?
Commissioner Hardesty, it is based on actually, I think, the number of vehicles that are registered within a jurisdiction. So within Multnomah County, they do the number of cars, and there's the big pool of state money, and then they divide it up by the number of vehicles in your city or in your county, and then we have another relationship with Multnomah County in terms of how the money is distributed in Multnomah County, since we have virtually all the roads in Multnomah County. So we get much of that in the Resolution A, so we get most of those dollars. So. And then the question, the big puzzle, so it's of the state money, which is both motor vehicle fuel and trucking, 50% of that money goes to the state, and 30% goes to the county, and then 20% goes to the city. So that's kind of the big, how the pie is distributed on the state level. So 50% goes to the state, 30% to the county, and 20% to the city. So, but it's based on the number of motor vehicles within your county.
So do we have trucking companies that are operating clean diesel vehicles, and are they getting exemptions because they are helping us to reach our climate goals, our climate justice goals?
I don't have that information in terms of it's not part of this program that we've done. We've been mostly just focused on kind of the cost responsibility in terms of miles driven as opposed to the fuel that they consume.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. All right, we will take a vote on the resolution. Please call the roll on the resolution. Item 113.
Fritz. Well, unlike 4 years ago, I didn't hear anybody say don't do the Fixing Our Street program or the 10-cent gas on lighter vehicles. And so it's really a testimony to Portland Bureau of Transportation, Commissioner Novick, Commissioner You Daily, Chris Warner, that it has been a very successful program. Thank you for the Community Oversight Committee and your testimony today. I certainly, when driving or walking or taking the bus around, I see there's lots of room for improvement pretty much everywhere. And so we got so far behind for so long, despite efforts under previous mayors to address this issue, that I believe this is absolutely the right thing to do. I did do my own testing once the gas tax went into effect. I was at a wedding down I-5, and I happened to check the Fred Meyer gas prices at three different locations, one in Portland and two outside of Portland. They were all exactly the same. And in fact, there's a difference between the East Portland stations and the West Portland stations. So I think that in itself is telling, and it tells me that the price at the pump is not necessarily related to what different jurisdictions tax. So I'm very happy to be here to support this program. Aye.
Hardesty?
I think we've had some excellent results from this four-year tax. I certainly know in my neighborhood we are seeing finally some much-needed street improvements and repairs. I am concerned about the difference between what staff has said about what the trucking industry pays and what the trucking industry has said.
That's
being in the
one.
Room.
That's an excellent. This is just the.
Oh, I'm
resolution.
Sorry. This is just a 2 cent one.
I'm fixing our, the 10
thank
cent
you.
One, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
The 10 cent one. Yeah. Thank you. In that case, I will delay those comments until we get to that. So let me just say that because I rarely appreciate staff. I want to start by greatly appreciating Commissioner Udaly and her leadership around making sure that A, we were prioritizing the right locations, and B, I want to really thank Chris Warner for his leadership and making sure that the Oversight Committee really was committed to both making sure that our community was safer, A, and B, making sure that we had significant participation from our co-bidders. It is, as you know, it's a vital, that's of vital importance to me that we actually do what we say we want to do when we talk about helping small businesses to grow in this city. And so it is with great privilege that I support this measure. I vote aye.
Udaly.
Well, I want to thank everyone who came to give invited testimony today at City Hall to show support for this referral and the Fixing Our Streets program. I want to thank my predecessor, both in this seat and as the Transportation Commissioner, Commissioner Steve Novick, for getting Fixing Our Streets off the ground and helping to win voter support in 2016. Also, thanks go out to my incredible team at PBOT for putting this presentation together, Director Warner, Interim Assistant Director Noah Siegel, Mark Lear, Millicent Williams, Hannah Schaefer, and every PBOT and PBOT maintenance operations employee that has worked to develop and deliver on fixing our streets. As we heard this afternoon, and as we've seen on our streets, these investments are vital for our community. I urge all voters to cast your ballots this May in support of renewing this gas tax. It's well worth the dimes we pay at the pump, and it will provide us the tools we need to advance safety, equity, and sustainability in Portland's transportation system. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
So I want to also acknowledge the work of, first of all, the people in PBOT who work so hard on this and work with people in the community and have addressed the issues raised by the audit previously. I want to thank the citizen volunteers who engaged through the Oversight Committee for the tireless efforts they've put into this. And I think it's also important to remember the work that Steve Novick and former Mayor Hales put into this effort. They got beat around a little bit as they worked on this issue, and it was a really important issue, and I appreciated the fact that they stuck with it. They understood that there was a local problem related to safety, related to infrastructure. There was an acknowledgement that increasingly local jurisdictions are required to act on their own behalf, even though historically that was not always the case when it came to investing in transportation infrastructure. So I was happy to have supported this 4 years ago when it came to the voters, and I am happy to support it again now. I want to just acknowledge what Commissioner Hardesty started to talk about, since we're not going to be discussing the ordinance because we're not taking a vote on it, but there were some questions there that were raised. I think we've all acknowledged this is not completely perfect. It's much, much, you know, far more refined than it was 4 years ago. And as I say, the purpose is absolutely a critically important one, and I support it. But I believe we should continue the conversation and continue to work with all of the stakeholders in this community to always ensure that we do the best that we can. On the resolution, I'm very happy to vote aye. The resolution is adopted.
to the ordinance number 114. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you very much. And now we're going